Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Darren, I don't usually start with a broad topic on a TV show, but this kind of came across like, and I hope everyone doesn't just tune out immediately when I say this, but one of the least newsworthy SmackDowns I can remember in a while.
I would absolutely agree with that. I was like, wow, what are we going to start with? Because nothing really stood out. So
I know. I usually have like, you know, 2 to 6 things to choose from.
Sure.
And I got nothing that just like is jumping out as a big thing. Do you think Paul Levesque just burned out his booker now? Should we start?
Is it already happened, right? He's already hit the wall. I mean, besides the tank coming back, I mean, really, what else do we have to talk about?
I mean, it might not be as long of a show as usual, to be honest, because of that. I'm not seeing the callers lining up. I haven't checked the inbox, but yeah, we're not getting emails. I mean, maybe we should talk Impact for a little bit, Derek.
Right? All weeks. I get this week.
I was thinking that, too, as I asked you. I'm like, oh, what a nice week to pick for you to be back on as co-host. Well,
yes.
let's do our best.
Okay.
I want to start with Sami Zayn and Solo Sikoa against Ricochet and Madcap Moss. So we have Solo and Sami winning. You know, pretty straightforward match, a little bit of distraction interference at ringside. No surprise Solo and Sami got the win. It was kind of a coin flip for me whether Ricochet or Moss would take the pinfall. Moss took the pinfall from Solo. Does that tell you anything, by the way, that they're protecting Sami more than Madcap at this point, or do you just think it was probably a coin flip backstage too?
No, I think they see a little more in Ricochet. Looks like they've been trying to do a little more with him in recent weeks, so I'm not entirely surprised by that. Moss, after his after losing the suspenders, has kind of been on the back burner after the Baron Corbin feud, so I'm not shocked by that whatsoever. I think there's a little more upside with Ricochet as well, so why have him eat the pin when you don't have to, when you could just have Moss do it?
Yeah, yeah. And I still got to say, Sami is still, I mean, we can't be too down on SmackDown when we get Sami.
Sure.
Sami. Him coming out onto the stage and dancing as obnoxious as any drunk guy at a wedding or at a club. And then Solo coming out and Sami getting in his face like Solo just scored a touchdown and Sami's the quarterback running up saying, good catch, good catch.
Yeah.
And then the celebration afterwards. So I enjoyed that. So SmackDown's wonderful with Sami. But then we had a backstage segment a little bit later after the break, which I think was intriguing, and I don't know that we should make a ton of it. But so Sami is talking to Solo backstage about how great this win was, and you know, making maybe a slightly bigger deal out of the win than Solo was feeling. And they were about to go into the Bloodline locker room when Jey Uso stepped out.
Uh-huh.
And Sami said, what are you doing here? And Jey said, oh, you don't worry about that. I'm just here to make sure my little brother's good. And Sami said, oh, he's good. Did you just watch us? We won. So Solo just goes in the locker room, like, whatever. You know, he's like, I'm just going to go in the locker room. So Jey said, then pulls Sami privately aside and says, I see right through you. I know you had everyone fooled, but if you put the family in jeopardy, you'll get them. And Sami said, well, you take that up with Roman. I'm intrigued by this, and I guess this could be probably the legit top talking item coming out of this show, which is, what is Jey getting at? And is that planting a seed that maybe Sami is faking his enthusiasm for being in the Bloodline because he wants to infiltrate and turn on them, or is that preposterous and also a bad idea, and it's just Jey being paranoid, but now we see at least why Jey is glaring at Sami, because he's now expressed and articulated his, at least one of his reasons, if not his primary reason, for not liking Sammy as much as, say, Jimmy does, and really Solo and Roman too.
Right. They're definitely planting a seed for something. It could play out that Jay was the first one to see that Sammy was playing them for fools, and then he could use that to show Roman that he was the guy who saw through it and maybe use that to his advantage in whatever way possible. That's one way you could go with it. I also noticed later on, Sammy was not in the locker room. He was in a hallway, but there was like a locker in the hallway. Did I see that right? Because it was kind of weird. Yeah, when Owens walked past the Maximum Male Models, he stopped at Sammy next, and Sammy was in the hallway in a locker that was just right in the middle. I don't know if they just had to do that just to play it out that way, or if that's symbolic of Sammy got kicked.
I don't know about that. I have to review that. I want to get your take on the delightfulness of Sammy, but also the dynamic between them. I wrote the cover story of this past week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, was all about the Bloodline. You know, that big SmackDown rating last week, which they're not going to repeat this week. And just the dynamic where each person in that group, in that faction, has a unique dynamic with everybody else. And I think it makes it so interesting. And adding Solo and now officially Sammy to the mix, and then, you know, Heyman is back. It just suddenly has taken on so many dimensions. And this was a stripped-down version of it, for sure.
Right.
You know, without Heyman and Roman or Jimmy, and maybe Florida has something to do with this show being lighter on news than usual with the hurricane coming through. So while I'm observing it wasn't a big show, I'm not being critical of it because I do think that was a factor. And so, you know, we can joke about Paula Beck being burned out as Booker, but maybe he had a blockbuster show planned and he just didn't have the personnel for it. And I haven't confirmed that either way, although other than them mentioning that the Brawling Brutes weren't able to be there because of that. That was mentioned on air. So what's your take? How high are you on the Bloodline dynamic? And give me your theory on what you think is going on with Sammy.
A couple things here. Last week, I was watching Victory Road, so I missed SmackDown, which was on at the same time. Poor programming choices. against each other. But I listened to your post show, which I always do. And I noticed how you raved about that for opening SmackDown segment. So I was like, well, I got to check that out the next day on DVR. And I was glad I did because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you pointed out you could look at each single person and they all had a different reaction and how they all played their different parts of it. And it was just so good and so compelling because everything from Jay ripping the shirt. He could not wait to rip that shirt off of Sammy after Sammy hesitated to take it off because he was so allegedly hurt that he was asked to remove the shirt. And then this week, which led into this week where he had on the honorary Uso shirt that he was so happy about that he actually wrestled in it. So, I mean, that reaction, him coming out dancing and everything, it's just a joy. The Bloodline is really clicking, and they all have different roles that they're all playing to perfection. Going back into what you said about obviously the hurricane prevented a couple of people. They also mentioned Io Sky and her partner were also not there because of the hurricane. I think Cole mentioned that. Dakota Kai, sorry. And also, they're in Winnipeg. They're in Canada this week, so there might have been some people that could not have passed the vaccination restrictions also. So that is a possibility as well. I noticed a few key names were missing, but could have been the Florida thing, could have been the vaccination thing.
You know what? Congratulations to Paul Levesque for putting a great show together considering all the circumstances working against him. Let's just revise our opening.
I'll take back right what we said.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it doesn't change the fact that it wasn't the most newsworthy SmackDown, but yeah.
Sure.
Whatever combination of things he had working against him, he did kind of have to piece something together one way or the other. And you know what? Main event was good.
It was solid.
About that. With the wrestlers who were involved there. You know, it was a lot of talent in the ring, and Gargano continues to just, I think, fit in really well with the WWE main roster. It's one of the nice parts about Paul Levesque's booking is he's not going to hold against Gargano any of the things that Vince McMahon might have, and that is really
right.
Nice. I don't get the sense Gargano's like being like saved or protected for a world title run, but it's not like anything they're doing with him rules that out either, that he might at some point challenge for a singles title.
No, and it's good, and it shows he's in the main event picture, so they're not going to hold any of his perceived shortcomings against him, and that's good to know. I mean, I could see him, again, he might not be in the world title picture, but I could see him going for the IC belt, or if he switches brands, the U.S. belt, something like that, and being protected to some degree. So, yeah, it's not, you know, in the world, not everybody's going to be in the world title picture. So
yeah.
I think he'll be fine. He's doing much better than he would under a Vince regime, so.
Yeah. All right, well, very cool. Let's pause and introduce the show, and then we'll get to phone calls and perhaps emails if we get any. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 30th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I'm also the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. And also some VIP podcasts that are available if you're a VIP member. So check out VIP membership details at pwtorch.com/govip. An array of just decades of retro radio shows and podcasts, thousands of them, and also almost thousands, over 1,700 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter available on demand instantly. Fascinating reporting, editorials, insider long-form Q&A interviews that I conducted with some of Pro Wrestling's biggest names. Lose yourself in our archives on a rainy day or a cold fall day. So go VIP if you haven't yet. The other voice you hear is Darren Lilly, who is PWTorch.com's primary Impact TV reporter and pay-per-view reporter, and also Impact VIP podcaster. Darren, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks. It's good to be here. We were talking earlier, and yeah, it's been a while, but yeah, glad to be back.
That blew my mind. You know, like I've got sort of a rotation, and
right.
And I looked, and I went to like, you know, I'm like, oh, I've had Darren on in a while. I thought it'd been like, you know, 4 or 5 months or something. It's been like a year.
Yes.
I can't believe it. So I'm surprised you're even still talking to me. I think
you know, I don't hold grudges.
You don't seem like the type.
No.
But you can never know. So, yeah, check out Darren's coverage of Impact Wrestling on pwtorch.com. You can listen to him podcast about Impact with a VIP membership. All right, if you want to join the show tonight, our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. And when you call push 1 on your keypad, that plays you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get to calls, and we'll begin with Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, you are up first. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. How are things going?
Things are going really well. Yeah, it's funny how you guys brought that up earlier, because I was kind of thrown off. It's like, wow, there's really nothing big time here at all. There's nothing like that exciting per se. I was like, wow. They're thinking the same thing I was. But first, Darren, it has been a long time to talk to you, man. I'm glad you're on. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Great to talk to you, Sean.
Yeah. I guess I'll lean towards something a little different and go to – I want to hear what you guys thought about Cross's, you know, promo, the video thing. Wade, the more, I mean, I was always kind of with you. I'm more and more with you. I'm just not digging Karrion at all. I'm not digging it. I don't know, there's nothing good about what he does. It's just kind of so boring, and he tries to make it, you know, like he's, you know, devastating and scary and, and Scarlett, I mean, I love what she did in NXT, but she's not really helping him at all right now. What did you guys think about that promo he did? And does it make you any more excited for what they're going to do with him and Drew? And does Drew just have to win, you know, because I didn't like that at all, what they did with him tonight. I'm not digging Karrion at all.
I wrote in my report at pwtorch.com tonight covering SmackDown, I thought this was maybe the best Karrion Kross segment I've seen on the main roster, perhaps in NXT, including that. I like Karrion Kross's look with the hair. I thought that he had substance in his promo. It wasn't just, platitudes and those infamous facial expressions that, as I say, look like trying to scare a 9-year-old girl at a Halloween haunted house. He's backed off of that, and I thought expanded his demeanor to feel more sophisticated and authentic. He also was specific about his issue with Drew. And I mean, I'm not sure I can fully explain it, but I know he was specific. Accused Drew of wanting to march in and just get a title shot, and they both want the same thing. And when he's done with him, he'll send him to hell and then go after Roman Reigns. I thought it was pretty solid. I think the filming of it is improved. I think Scarlett is being utilized well in the vignettes and certainly is a valuable part of the act. I think it's better. I don't think it's like great, but it's better. And I would call it, you know, at least acceptable given his level of push. The key is going to be, and I'm not sure the match at Extreme Rules is going to be the best test, is can he have a traditional, really good main event WWE style match? A strap match gives him an out, you know, in terms of needing to do the things that I think have been his shortcomings, even in NXT. Darren, I'm curious for your thoughts on him, including, you know, prior to WWE.
Yeah, I have to kind of agree with Sean here. He's just someone that I don't think fans are necessarily clamoring for. Seeing his work in Impact, a little bit of Lucha Underground, NXT, and he's just never really clicked for me. Just something, there's some ingredient just missing. Obviously, he had some bad gimmicks on his WWE main roster run and the horrible costume and everything. But as far as tonight, the segment was well produced. The segment was carried by the production values. I thought it was very well done. He had good delivery. I was real happy with that. With that said, it was a positive in that it kept him out of the ring. So the less he's in the ring, the better. So more of these kind of vignettes, the better, because the less ring time he has, I think he'll get over more. So I would encourage this route as opposed to having him do long matches or even short matches for that matter. But this will be the whole key. If you keep doing this type of promo where he plays to his strengths, I think he'll be fine. I think the most compelling thing to come out of the whole segment was that there was a QR code towards the end that led to some more White Rabbit speculation.
I didn't see it. I was probably busy just typing up what I was doing on
it was very quick.
Yeah, they're making it quick. Okay. When was it in the show? You said right at the end?
It was right at the end of their little promo. It was real quick. I had to pause the DVR like three times to be able to catch it. And what did you want me to say what it led to?
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
It led to some kind of, it looks like kind of some 60s animation of like a pig playing a flute. And there was a little clip of meat hanging up. You could see like a big guy dressed up as like the Big Bad Wolf also. Had started off with happy music and then it transferred into kind of like Morse code.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, let me back to you for any follow-up, anything we just said there.
No, I guess I will say, I mean, the delivery was definitely better. I mean, I'm with you guys on that. I thought it was, I mean, if you're saying, if there's a really high bar, I mean, this is very low still on that bar, but it was definitely better than a lot of the promos he's done. So, I mean, it was better. I mean, I will agree with that, but I don't know. He just doesn't do anything. Every time, because I saw him, I didn't see him in Impact at all. I just, you know, kept up from NXT on, and I just have nothing he's done has really done anything for me. And I just don't think. I just think Drew has to beat him here, and just. But that's the sad part, because I think Triple H has brought him in for a reason, and I don't think, you know, he just wants to have Cross get right away. But I just think you have Drew that's still something there with him, and I don't think you can have him lose to Cross unless you just go back to it and have Drew beat him. But then, again, it's just like back-and-forth wins and losses. So, I mean, do you guys think Drew definitely wins, or, you know, where do you think they're going with the match itself?
You know, that's a good question, is what they do for the finish. It's not a match where if either guy loses, it necessarily is like defines them down because, oh, my God, they lost because of the stipulation. It's not really losing to the finisher or by pinfall. But, you know, who wins and who loses still will send a message to the audience who's got, you know, that famous WWE momentum, or who Levesque is protecting at the moment in order to elevate. I don't see Cross and Reigns fighting because I don't think they want fans cheering Reigns or cheering Karrion, and it's really early in Karrion's run, and the only reason you do a heel-heel matchup is if it's a dream match that'll draw a ton of money, and Cross certainly isn't at that stage. What do you think, Darren?
I agree. It looks like Triple H certainly has plans for him, for Cross, but if Cross loses here, wins and losses mean a little more under the Triple H regime, and this would certainly send a message that if he loses, I mean, that's not good for him. But I think he kind of has to win. But I don't think you want to do that with Drew, because Drew just is coming off of a loss to Roman Reigns as well, and he's a guy that you can still build around and might be a future world champion. So they're kind of in a dilemma, but I think they're going to pick Cross because you'll just be cutting him off if he loses, even though he does have an out with the strap stipulations. But still, where do you go with him if he loses? I mean, I think that's it for him. So I think he's got to win.
Sean, what do you think?
Oh, well, I mean, I personally think Drew should win, just because there's more invested in Drew. I don't see much upside with Cross. I really don't. I just think he's more of a mid-card act that could get a title match maybe here or there, but I there's more built in Drew. I don't think another loss is good for him. I really don't, even with the stipulation. I just think Drew, you know, I would go with Drew if it were me, but Wade, who do you think is winning? Like, who do you think would win this if you had to pick right now before next week?
I mean, the announcers have really been talking about how Drew isn't a complainer and he just wants to do his talking in the ring. It almost seems like they might be setting him up to lose because Scarlett interferes, and they'll just kind of keep saying, you know, he's not going to complain. He's just going to try to get revenge against Cross. So I could see that. If they don't have, you know, and Grace talked about Drew kind of taking on the role of a gatekeeper now. So if that's the case, if Cross beats Drew, it almost puts Cross in a position to start demanding a title shot that he's already talked about. And I don't think they're going that direction. But if Drew wins, doesn't he start talking about a title rematch, or else it looks like he's not interested or, you know, isn't driven?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a conundrum, Darren.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree with that as well. You want Cross in the title picture, and that would be the logical next step. And at this stage in the game, you don't want that. And I don't think fans want that as well. I don't know what it is that Triple H sees in him necessarily. Maybe that he was just a surprise guy to come back. But as I alluded to before, no one's clamoring to see him. But I think he's going to win next week. And he might be in the title picture, but again, that creates, you don't want people cheering for Roman, and that's exactly what's going to happen. So it'll be intriguing. I mean, he certainly has put some intrigue in the match to see who wins. If that was his purpose, he succeeded in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sean, what else?
So I did want to bring up what Darren, you said at the beginning, also about Shotzi bringing the tank. I was like, oh God, not again. Like, come on. We finally got rid of that, and then you got to bring it back, don't you? You just have to do it, WWE. Thank you.
I know.
But
we gave him credit, Sean, for the absence of irritants, but, you know, the more that time goes by, he's bringing his own back.
It is. Nothing against Shotzi. Like, I'm just not a fan of Shotzi personally. Like, I think she's okay. I don't think she's bad. I'm not a huge fan.
She's bad tonight.
Oh, gosh. That match is
not
good.
That was a clunky
match. Bayley. And that's what I'm saying. Bayley can usually bring somebody to a really good match, but Shotzi's just not really good in the ring. I'm sorry. She's not. And even Bayley, it's hard for her to bring her, you know, help her out because she's just not good. And, you know,
I don't know if Bayley's that into this anymore. I mean, this is not based on – it's pure conjecture and observation of TV. No insight from behind the scenes. But I just don't know if Bayley's that into this anymore. I mean, I hate to, like, say something without any level of knowledge beyond, but I think it's telling that if you watch her on the mic and in the ring since her return, it's not – there's nothing inconsistent with the conclusion that she's sort of moved on and this is just a job and a paycheck to her. I want to be fair about it, but I think, you know, she's getting paid to be a performer, and I think it's my, you know, it's fair observing her to say, I think she just looks like she's not all that into it. And that performance in the ring tonight, you know, we can, you know, blame Shotzi for it all we want, but that there's a level of bad timing and awkwardness there that is not consistent with good veteran wrestlers and what they're able to get out of somebody who's less than them in the ring. And I don't know what to make of that. What do you think, Darren?
I remembered you saying that in the post show last week. So I was specifically looking for that today in tonight's match. And I had to agree with that. I mean, it was a little bit lackluster. I don't know if maybe she's still having some problems stemming from the ACL surgery or something like that, but it just didn't click. There's nothing behind it, really. The promo she cut was very pedestrian, you know, relying on the little ding-dong catchphrase, which was, I think, inappropriate for the message she was trying to convey, just a little comedy for no reason. It just looked like she was phoning it in. So I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because we spent a long time. I mean, collectively, I think a lot of us spent a long time anticipating Bayley's return and it really making an impact on the women's division.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And and that's what I'm saying. Like, and that's what's disappointing to me. Like, and you guys are right, because when Bayley came back finally at SummerSlam with Dakota and Io, you kind of thought, okay, they're building something really good with her, and she's got some good young women behind her that can help. They can talk off of her, and that'll be really good. But yeah, Bayley has been pretty weak so far, and I love Bayley more than anybody. Again, I still think, as good as she's been as a heel, you know, in the pandemic era and the Thunderdome, I still am mad at Vince for ruining her as a babyface. I'm still mad about it. I know it's over. I know it's a long time ago. But I just, they had something so good, and Vince ruined it. Gosh, why'd you do it? Why'd you hurt me like that? But anyway, I'm with you guys on Bayley. And then I actually had two quick things, because I wanted to go back to Liv Rhonda, the little segments they did tonight. Just to go back to Rhonda again, like, what did she say in her promo? I still didn't really understand any of it. I just, her promos are really bad. And when the match with Natalya was what it was. And then Liv coming out, I just still don't know where they're going with Liv. They're just trying to give her that edge, and Liv's not good at, I don't know, something's just missing with this whole thing. What did you guys think about the segment with Liv and Rhonda tonight and the promo that Rhonda gave?
Yeah, I thought Rhonda's promo was fine, but it didn't help steer me on Liv. I still just have no idea how I'm supposed to feel about these two battling each other. It seemed like last week Cole was trying to emphasize Liv is willing to go hardcore and extreme, but are we like excited for that, or are we supposed to be rooting for her or not? And Rhonda's just like, well, if you think I'm, you know, the baddest woman on the planet, under normal circumstances, imagine me with a baseball bat, which then foreshadowed the angle that came later. But I mean, are they going to lead to like mutual respect between the two of them, and then they team up? You know, they ultimately just team up against Bayley's group or something like that. Because if they're not steering, it seemed like we were supposed to. It seemed like Liv was trying to come across as a heel, but I warned all along myself and on this show, it's like, I don't think it's worth reading into Liv's body language and acting, because I just don't think she necessarily portrays her. I think we can misread her because of her acting skills and her just sort of sense of self and how she projects. So I didn't want to read too much into it, but my observations were she's being kind of cocky and heelish, and I think that was her attempt to be confident in the face of somebody of Rhonda's stature. So I just don't know where this is leading, and I'm not that into it. And they keep trying to hard sell me on the idea that, boy, it's going to be amazing when Liv and Rhonda hit each other with things and an extreme match. And I guess I just would rather be more invested in who wins, and I'm not. Darren, what do you think?
After watching the segment, I decided that the mystery has been solved of whether she's a heel or not. She came out with a weapon and brought the fight and got dusted. I mean, that is a heel. I mean, you can't expect fan support for that. And, and then she attacked Ronda from behind also after getting beaten up with her own weapon. So, I mean, she's got to be a heel. I think they're going with Ronda here, and I think this is the end of the Liv experiment for whatever it was. But, yeah, a badly conceived heel, but I think she's a heel.
Yeah. I think Liv is going to be better off as a upper mid-card, sympathetic babyface, and I think they have her miscast right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. What else, Sean?
The last thing I was going to ask you guys was going back with the kind of talking about the Sheamus and Gunther and kind of I wanted to kind of preview the match for next week. I thought that the segment tonight was fine. But obviously, that Ridge and Bush couldn't be there because, you know, my prayers again are out to everybody in Florida that's been affected by the hurricane. It's, you know, it's definitely a sad time. But I'm really intrigued. Again, the segment tonight was good. Sheamus was good. I want him as a pure baby face now. Like, he's doing really good stuff. I'm still intrigued by this match next week because, again, it's kind of the same conundrum. It's like they keep bringing up over and over and over when Sheamus fights for the Intercontinental title, but he's never won it before. And so you're like clamoring, you kind of want to see him win, but I don't want the title off Gunther. I think he's doing a really good job. I still think they have good plans for him, and I want somebody to have a title again for a long period of time. So where do you think they're going with the segment? What do you think of the segment? Where do you think they're going with that match? Who do you think might win that match? Because I still think Gunther has to win. And, Wade, I appreciate all you do. Darren, it's always good to talk to you, man. I like seeing your Impact stuff because I don't get to watch it, so I like seeing your reports on it. And I appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Great. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
As always. Yeah. They keep saying Sheamus hasn't won the title. I think Gunther keeps the title. I think Sheamus will still come up short unless they trade wins. I'm a fan of Sheamus. I'm a fan of him as a babyface right now. I think he's a good character, but I think Gunther has been protected and has an upside, and I just don't think you define him as, and I hate saying this, but being merely at Sheamus' level. And Sheamus is at a good level right now, but Gunther has not, there's not a ceiling on him right now. So I guess I don't know the long-term plans for him and what they have in mind for Sheamus. And this isn't any way to diminish how Sheamus has done over the past couple of years, which I think he's had a really good couple of years here, but I'd still go with Gunther. How about you?
I think they've done a great job of rejuvenating Sheamus, but I think that's to elevate him to, as you alluded to before, kind of a gatekeeper role. And so when Gunther beats him next week, which I think will happen, it'll actually mean something like, wow, he beat Sheamus again. And Sheamus is a big time top player. And Sheamus is not harmed by that whatsoever. I mean, he's at this point almost a legacy star. So, I mean, what harm is it for him to lose? But meanwhile, that will absolutely elevate Gunther to have two big wins over him. And that's somebody that you could have a big match at WrestleMania with. So I think they're going to go with Gunther, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Cool. Our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call and let us know what you thought of tonight's SmackDown. When you call, be sure to push 1 on your keypad, as Brad from New York did. Brad, you are up next. Welcome to the show. What do you think of SmackDown?
Yeah, thanks, guys. On Sheamus and Gunther, it's interesting because that match is the day before the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, where, again, the teams are going up against each other.
Oh,
you know, Sheamus and his group. Gunther. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I heard someone talking in the background.
I didn't mute
Sean. You hear that wave or no?
Sean. Yeah, Sean.
All right.
Sean, I forgot to mute Sean after his call, and he started saying something. I'll go back and review it and see what Sean did. No, I won't. Sean, I'm sure you meant that to be a private comment.
Hey, at least Sean wasn't calling me a moron. I find it interesting that, the match is the day before Extreme Rules. Now, how do you – I mean, if Sheamus doesn't win, which I know that that's your prediction, and I understand where that's coming from, that the belt stays on Gunther, but how does that give any heat to that match if, you know, Sheamus just loses again? I mean, I could see a scenario where Sheamus wins that belt on Friday night, they go into that match with the Brawling Brutes, Gunther does not have the championship anymore, that whole thing is taking place and playing out, and then maybe Sheamus loses it back at day one or at, you know, I don't think Crown Jewel, I don't think they would do that match at Crown Jewel, I'm not sure, but regardless, you know, I don't know how Gunther winning sets up anything for the match the very next day that makes it more compelling. So I just find the timing of that match to be interesting. Like, I would think it would be after the Extreme Rules match where, you know, Gunther and Sheamus get into it, and then they announce for the next week that you're going to have this big match, you know, on SmackDown or whatever the case is. I understand it's the season premiere and they need a big match to put on for the season premiere, and obviously October is sweeps for Nielsen ratings and everything like that, but still, I you know, you could do it the next week in October and it still will count towards the sweep. So I'm a little curious about that, if you could comment on that, and then just with the timing of that match. Secondly, I did find Bayley to be a lot more palatable without Io and Dakota tonight. I don't know why. I just found she was better on her own. Like, it just made me feel a little bit differently about her. And I don't know why. I really don't know why. Maybe you could put your finger on that, or maybe I'm just the only person who feels that way. And thirdly, you know, on Liv Morgan, I could not agree anymore that, I mean, she came out like a heel tonight. You know, she's wearing all black. There's no smiles. There's no anything. She has a baseball bat. She's trying to use a weapon, and the other person doesn't have a weapon. She's then going back for the weapon to use it again. I think it's pretty obvious that she's turning heel, irrespective of how good or bad her acting might or might not be. Even just her outfit and her, you know, don't smile, don't, you know, no slapping hands, no nothing. Like, I don't know, it just felt very evident that she's going heel, you know, to me. Just your thoughts on that stuff.
Yeah, so I'll go to the middle one. Bayley, I think when she started her solo promo tonight, I was like, oh, this might be better. This is better. And then by the end, I was sort of like, yeah, I don't know, it just felt sort of flat. It didn't really stick with me. So, I mean, if you thought it was better than usual, I get that because I sort of had that feeling. But I still just felt – and then I think it just – the match was so lousy. I didn't come away with any good feelings. I mean, it's just – it seems like her mind is elsewhere as she's wrestling now, and that's just not good. Someone needs to light a fire on her, or she needs to be excited about her character, or she needs an opponent that she's excited to be in the ring with. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to, you know, have this be Bash Daily night, daily episode of the Wade Keller Protein Pulse Show, but I mean, it's true. She's a big name. She was gone for a long time, and even if this was a slightly better week on the mic, it was her worst night probably in the ring. Whether that's on, you know, all on her or not, you know, well, certainly it's not all on her, but I don't know. I'm hoping for more. You know, Sean had mentioned, you know, her babyface character and holding a grudge. It would be kind of ridiculous if she was still playing that character right now. You know, Travis Bryant always talked about how there's a limited time for this to work because of her age. She's going to age out of it. So I think she had to go somewhere else. That said, there was time to do it right when she first came up to the main roster, and Vince did blow it.
Yeah.
And go with any – you can talk about his other points too, Darren.
Sure. Going back to the Sheamus point, I believe in the timing of it, I think it was strictly so they would have a big attraction for the season premiere, especially – coming on the heels of a very lackluster season finale, which is one of the worst season finales of any show that you might see. Also, the Bayley thing without our partners there, it was too brief for me to even. I thought it was lackluster still with or without partners. A little bit more focused, but it's still lackluster. And as far as the Liv thing, they're really trying to give her an edge so that she has credibility against Ronda without the two fluke wins that she had, trying to hope, I guess, that we forget that, because they have not mentioned that that they were absolutely fluke wins and that Ronda kind of ran over her in that second match. And so they're trying to throw the kitchen sink at the fact to give her an edge, and it's not necessarily working. And I think that we'll see the results of that Saturday.
Brad, did we cover your points? I know you had three items.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, good.
Just last thing on Theory, making friends with the Alpha Academy and this whole, you know, Drew, Kevin Owens, Gargano alliance. You know, obviously we've seen Gargano and Owens together. We've seen, you know, of course, Alpha Academy together and with Theory last week on Raw. But I'm wondering if they're setting this up for like a War Games type of match where more, you know, because that's what it seemed like this was maybe setting up to me. Like one of the War Games matches will be this, you know, anti-Theory faction versus this pro-Theory faction. And
yeah,
I found that to
too.
Be, I, yeah, oh, it did, yeah, because that was the only reason I, unless, like, they were so shorthanded on the roster because of, you know, the Florida stuff, and I know, like, half of the WWE roster lives in Florida, so, like, you know, maybe that was just why this was just thrown together, but it did kind of feel like that to me, you know, and I was just wondering if you guys thought maybe that they were setting it up. It sounds like you did, Wade. War Games match at Survivor Series and just planting the seeds for that, you know, or maybe just a regular Survivor Series tag team match. I'm not sure.
That's the thing.
Still,
I would say my thought was maybe, but not for sure. I just want to be clear on that. I didn't watch this going, oh, that's for sure. Now we know, as much as, oh, maybe this is going to be where they head with that as we try to figure out what the War Games match will be. Darren, how about you? Did that cross your mind?
No, I can't see them at War Games because I think that Theory and Alpha Academy are too comedy-based to be in a War Games. I think they want to make War Games a big deal since it's the first time on the main roster, and this will absolutely kill the concept. I'm thinking more of something like a Bloodline main eventing, but Theory... That's a good question. I mean, it could be...
That's the only thing I tripped.
Yeah. There's no obvious opponent. I mean, you could... get Drew and he could get some of his friends. I guess you could go that route, perhaps something like that. But there's no obvious opponent, but I just can't see people the caliber of Alpha Academy in there, just how they're treated.
Right.
You just couldn't take it seriously. Now you could, if they want to do, yes, a traditional Survivor Series tag team match, they're perfect for that. If you want to just, throw traditional bone there, perfect. But I think they really want to do some of War Games, and that would be the wrong team to put in there.
Yeah. Brad, anything else?
Very lastly, LA Knight, Max Dupri.
Yeah.
Obviously left the group tonight.
I
love, you know, his whole tagline. Well, he would say, "Let me talk to you," and then he would always say, "Yeah," when he was LA Knight.
Yeah.
And he left that segment by saying, yeah. And your caller, Matt, a few weeks back had brought up when they were doing SmackDown in Anaheim. He said, we're a stone's throw from L.A. And he had said something another time, like, you know, the night is always blah, 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 whatever he said. Like, almost like Bray Wyatt-esque riddles, but I mean, do you think he's definitely going back to the character of LA Knight, and how do they pull that off? Like, maybe you don't have a concrete answer, but is that acceptable at this point to say, I was never really Max Dupri, I was just after this stupid group, I'm LA Knight, that's who I am, almost like taking the Bruce Wayne off and turning into the Batman, you know? I don't know, but just want your thoughts on that, and... have a good evening. This is always an enjoyable listen, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness and the time, guys.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate the questions and the thoughts. Yes. I mean, transitioning to LA Knight, do they pretend he never was? Do they pretend he always was? Is Maxine no longer his sister? I do have those questions, Darren. I'm not sure how much it matters, but to a degree it does.
Yeah, they're doing things a little more logically, so I think they will acknowledge that he's going to shift characters, and they're not going to ignore the character that he played in NXT. For all we know, he might go to being Eli Drake. He might bring that name back, but that remains to be seen. The whole point of it was the Maximum Model skits was a long way to go for that lame payoff, that show long angle about them holding the longest pose or whatever. They went back to it repeatedly, and I thought it was a waste of time. Those skits stand out so much as like a Vince era type thing with all that's going on now, and it looks like they're increasing in volume. I mean, I thought we'd have less of them, but it looks like we're getting more of them, and I just don't – they don't fit in anymore. So hopefully once Eli turns, that'll be the end of them, because I don't really see an upside with all the airtime they're getting.
What is the upside for LA Knight? Is it as a manager? Is it as a wrestler? If it's as a wrestler, at what level, based on what we've seen from him in other companies or under other logos?
His Impact run, of course, comes to mind. He was a good talker. He was solid in the ring. I mean, nothing spectacular, but, I mean, he was serviceable. He'd be a good mid-carder. Elias came to mind kind of on that level, something like that. I don't see him as, like, a top-tier title contender or anything like that, no. But I think he's capable of more than being a manager and more than he's done with the models. So there's a bigger upside. A real good talker. You could have him do like a talk show segment. He had one in Impact that was fairly entertaining at times. So you could go that route. You could get a lot more out of him than you are now.
Yeah, I'm glad he's in WWE. I thought he would, you know, be a good talker. You know, and help fill TV time. I mean, he's gonna be 40 years old on November 1st.
Yeah.
So now, you know, mileage on his body standpoint, I don't know how beat up he is or anything like that, but it seems like, you know, he's got something to give still physically in the ring. But, you know, he's not Austin Theory, you know? So being a manager or player coach who takes some bumps but is out there promoting somebody else of higher caliber seems like it might be the role that would give him the most upside in a WWE environment. But I mean, I look forward to it. I mean, I don't think Paul Levesque would have brought him back after his, you know, like last second falling out with Vince McMahon over this gimmick. I don't think Levesque would have brought him back if he didn't think highly of him. So I think Levesque's got something in mind for him, and I don't think it's going to be, you know, saying his dream has always been to be 24/7 champion. I mean, I think it'll be something more than that.
Yeah, Triple H definitely sees something in him because he wouldn't have rescued him and brought him back. We'll see if he sinks or swims up there, because he's certainly going to get a chance to do something. But I think he will play to his strength and letting him talk a little bit more. The original manager role, I thought, that's fitting. It's not what I would have done with him originally, but I thought ultimately it was a good fit. Not as physical for him, and obviously he's getting up there a little bit, so... But I think he's going to be back in the ring, and we'll see what he can do.
Yep. All right. Cool. There's an email here from Matt from Wilmington, Delaware. I'll sneak in here. We got Javier on hold, by the way. So
okay.
Roundtable coming up in a bit.
All right.
Matt says, backstage, Kevin Owens passed Sammy and said he needs a new shirt. Do you think there's some foreshadowing eventually Kevin Owens and Sammy will join together as a team? So that's his first question. Absolutely. I mean, They have teased that. They have talked about it. We have talked about it. It is absolute foreshadowing, and I liked it. I thought it was interesting because, you know, I'd say it's sort of like if you're in high school and you sort of have a certain group of friends, and you kind of they see you a certain way. Then you go off to college and you got a different group of friends, and they see you a different way. And then you get back and see an old high school friend. In your mid-20s, you might be more like that college guy day to day, but seeing that old high school friend brings you back to who you were then, and it kind of can make you go, oh, that's right. Yeah, I play almost like you play a different role for that person than you do lately for everybody else. And that's a cool part of life and getting older and having new experiences and different groups of friends. I kind of related to Sammy when Kevin Owens looked at that shirt and kind of, he didn't preach. He just sort of blew him off. Like, yeah, he should get a new shirt. I shouldn't say blew him off, but he sort of like made his comment and moved on. It wasn't like some hard sell to, you know, dude, what are you doing? This is awful, because who's Kevin Owens to judge? And Sammy's reaction was not definitive either way. It was interesting. It sort of seemed like Sammy was going, okay, I've been in this mode, but now that Kevin Owens crossed my path and said that, I am kind of remembering who I once was. And I thought it was well acted, and that was my read on it. And I think it's a slow, steady, patient build to Sammy eventually kind of breaking free from whatever mode or zone he's in now. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, it was very subtle, which WWE is not known for. Kevin was not preachy in his speech, and he kind of just planted the seed, and it's something that we'll refer back to maybe months from now. It is absolutely the end game that they are going to team up, maybe perhaps face the Usos at WrestleMania. That could be a featured match. That's just how I see it playing out. But in the meantime, I hope they don't rush it, because I'm really, number one, I'm enjoying the whole Bloodline interaction, you know, with Sammy being a key part of that. So I hope they don't rush it, but it is eventually getting there. Maybe pull the trigger on this. Give us a couple more months, January, February, something like that. The fans are going to be really clamoring for it by then. So looking forward to seeing it play out, but just keep it at this pace with little seeds planted along the way.
I won't complain if we get this until post-WrestleMania, and then they get into the KO-Sammy storyline of them teaming based on something that happens at Mania that sort of changes mm-hmm. Sammy's way of looking at who he's become and how Bloodline treat him. You know, I mean, I'm sure they can make it work in many different ways, but
absolutely.
I'm not ruling out this is really a long-term story arc.
Right. You could take it past SummerSlam if you really wanted to. They've got enough players to make that play out long enough, so I don't think it would drag whatsoever. And they've got very talented people playing those roles, so absolutely. I mean, the longer, the better for me. But Mania, as I was going to say, is a little bit soon, but I think that would be just right. But you could take it to SummerSlam, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. He also says, what do you make of Bayley in the ring? She seems sloppy, especially hitting the rose plant. Was this a product of working with Shotzi, or do you notice it with other wrestlers? Because I do. So, yeah, we mostly covered that. I won't pile on anymore. with Max Dupree being upset with the male models, it looks like he's going to be repackaged. Do you think they go back to LA Knight or another new character? Any chance they just give him a whole new name? I'm trying to think, like, Karrion Kross is still Karrion Kross. Candice LeRae, Johnny. I mean, he's sticking with the same name. So I assume it'll just be LA Knight.
I figure that it'll just be LA Knight for copyright purposes, since they own that. I don't see him going back to LA or Eli Drake, which would be cool. But since they own that LA Knight name, probably they'll just stick with that. It's just simple enough.
And finally, he said they've kept Ron and Liv backstage for the most part in the build to Extreme Rules, seemingly an effort to prevent the crowd from picking a side here. But they had them brawl tonight in Canada. Do you think this was a conscious choice, given that they're in Canada and the fans wouldn't necessarily overtly cheer Ronda there as they do in the States? Where do you see each character going as far as heel and face for this Extreme Rules match or thereafter? I guess we mostly covered that, Darren. I think Liv should be a face, and I think Ronda will stay a face because I think she wants that and they want that. I think she's been better lately. I think I don't know that they've been keeping them backstage to avoid fans taking sides as much as it allows them to tell Ronda that didn't work. Let's try again. Ronda, because when she's out in the middle of the ring, it can be rough.
Right. Yeah, I didn't necessarily agree with that. I don't think the fans have been reacting that overwhelmingly to Ronda in a positive way. If anything, it's for her not to get booed and heckled during the interviews. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, let's, having done that, let's move to Javier. Javier, welcome. Javier Machado, PWTorch.com and PWTorch VIP podcaster. Welcome to the post-show roundtable with Javier.
Hey, wait, hey, Darren. Have we talked?
Yes, but it was It's been a while. Yes. We've been on a round table before.
Yeah, because it's been quite a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
And obviously not that memorable.
I had a falling out.
Yeah, Javier, you just made Darren feel terrible.
Right.
I've been thinking about that for a whole year, how great that roundtable was.
Every day. And now I get this. Oh,
like,
man.
It's like that person at the wedding, you know, who you get sat with at the table. And you have this, like, you know, conversation that goes all night.
Right.
And, like, 8
right.
months later, see them at the next wedding.
Notice how Wade took the fact that I was calling him out for not having you on forever and, you know, switched it. So he's really good. I mean.
What a save.
Nice save, yes.
I have a theory. I do think that the Bloodline thing is going to eventually end Sammy and KO teaming up together against the Usos. But I have a theory because with what happened with Jay, the fact that he brings up, oh, I know what you're up to, now makes me think that maybe the one that gets excommunicated from the Bloodline isn't Sammy, but it's Jay. That Sammy basically takes up a role similar to, you know, the legendary Paul Heyman and starts manipulating, like, you know, getting close to Solo and manipulating Solo, and Jay starts bringing this up to Roman, and then Roman just, you know, ignores him, and then Jay keeps pushing until they basically, you know, kick him out because he's the troublemaker. You know, leading to a Jay face turn instead of, like, Sammy going off on his own as the face.
Do you like that, or are you just speculating on it?
Speculating it, I like it. I kind of like Sammy with KO, but you get a lot of heat when everybody likes somebody, and then you know you're ready to go for it, and then he does something completely dastardly and really starts manipulating the Bloodline. I mean, you know, Sammy Sammy himself would probably turn the entire Bloodline like face, and like basically you cheer and you boo Sammy. You know, because you could make him like, you know, old school Paul Heyman, like a new version of old school Paul Heyman.
Yeah, I want Sammy as a baby face.
Yeah, that's the one flaw in it, is that I think ultimately not only does WWE want Sammy as a face, but the fans will by that point as well. And so you've got to have him coming out of this, wanting him to team up with Owens at some point, and that wouldn't allow that to happen. That's the one drawback, but I think it's intriguing.
And that was just because of this episode, because after your the fix this week, when you talked about Todd brought up the fact that you and I want to clarify something. When you say that the heel should not turn on the heel, is that a hard and fast rule, or is that a rule of thumb rule? What?
Oh, rule of thumb. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like the Seth authority thing is like the prime example I always go to, where when you turn because the heels no longer have use for you, and now you want fans to cheer you because you got dumped by these scumbags and now you're alone, I just think it's one of the worst ways to turn babyface. So to me, I mean, the context matters, and every situation should be judged on its own merits, but it's sort of hard to imagine being a red-hot babyface because you would rather be with the heels, but since they won't have you, maybe I'll ask the fans to cheer me and be my friends. I just think that's terrible storytelling.
Yeah, okay, because that's what I want to bring up, because that I do think that the best way, if they're going to turn on Sammy, it is for the Bloodline to turn on Sammy, but Sammy before that has to start showing some sort of virtue. So not, you know, in terms of, like, oh,
yeah,
stand up with them. Yeah. You know, like maybe hesitate, like, because it's most likely going to happen when they order him to take out Kevin Owens and he hesitates. That sort of thing.
Javier, let me say this. If what you just described is Sammy doing a soft turn on his own, not I'm fiercely loyal to you and I like all your cheating and your arrogance and all those things that make you heel, and then they dump him, That's what I'm against. But if Sammy is just like, it's clear he's not with them anymore mentally, and he's struggling, and then he gives off signs that he's not going to stay loyal to the Bloodline and their way of doing things, he's essentially soft turned without, you know, it's like the relationship that's over, but no one breaks up. In Sammy's case, it would be, yeah, I see through these people, but I don't quite know how to end things. And then they pick up on it and they end things for him. That at least you've shown Sammy had that in his mind, he wasn't with them and they just sensed it and then, you know, turned on him.
Yeah. The other thing I have is the QR code. What they showed was Three Little Pigs from Disney's Silly Symphonies. The video showed images of that cartoon interspersed with they showed the pigs and then they showed a slaughterhouse of a pig. Hanging, and then they showed Big Bad Wolf. Then they showed another image that I couldn't really catch. and then the Morse code said Azazel Reborn. Azazel is a fallen angel that is linked to the concept of the scapegoat, which fits. You know, what's interesting is that it popped up at the end of the Karen Cross segment. So it makes me think that is Karen Cross the pig and is just being used by Bray Wyatt in order to weaken Drew McIntyre for then Bray to go after Drew McIntyre. So it may be that Karen Cross, because I don't think Karen Cross wins. I'm fairly certain that they're going to feed him to Drew McIntyre, and that's going to set up whatever the next segment is. And considering the fact that they're three little pigs makes me think that maybe we might not be seeing Bray Wyatt for a while. Cause I did hear a report where there were more people coming back that weren't on the radar, on people's radar, and maybe other people start showing up to take on Drew McIntyre to weaken him for an eventual maybe WrestleMania match with between Bray Wyatt and Drew McIntyre. So Bray Wyatt actually will not appear for a while. Instead, you'll have, like three tests first.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think that's extrapolating a lot from the clues, but nothing is inconsistent that you said with the clues we've had.
Yeah, and the other link with the pig is the Huskus. There's also the Huskus thing. There's also the idea that Bray Wyatt can feel being made the scapegoat for all the being blamed by management for a variety of reasons when it was management that screwed him over. So he can have that kind of complex. So I mean, there's a lot of things you can draw from that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, obviously people are intrigued. I think it's smart that they're doing, you know, kind of Easter eggs or little viral clues that get people talking. I think that's smart. I think, you know, there's a time and place for it. You don't want to overdo it. Having too many storylines going on that are outside, that are in, you know, that, as Cody said, shoulder content is a bad thing. But I think this works. I think it fits Bray Wyatt's motif in his history in WWE, and conversations like this are happening everywhere about it.
Yeah, the other thing, what Ronda Rousey said was that she couldn't beat me with a Hattori Hanzo katana, which I found a rather interesting choice. The real Hattori Hanzo was a ninja and not a swordsmith. The only Hattori Hanzo that was a swordsmith was fictional in Pulp Fiction. So not exactly sure what she was going there. Going for that, but because maybe that's the thing. Because like, I'm not sure if she wanted to sound smart by calling out, an actual Japanese swordsmith, or if she was making a pulp culture reference. So, in any case, it was weird. I love her because she's it's fun. not, you know, because it feels like she's authentic. So
yeah.
At least that's a positive, you know. I mean, whether you like her or not, then that's up to the person. It's, but you know,
it's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I was thinking the same
and I guess I'm in the minority, but I think Liv, if they're going to continue doing anything with Liv, I think she's got to go heel at this point. I agree. I don't think that they're going to, but I mean, the stuff that she's been doing, she's ducking fights, basically not willing to win fairly against Ronda. I mean, I guess in today's world where they're plotting, that's smart what the heel did kind of world. Maybe that works. I'm not feeling anything with Liv as a babyface right now. And I really want to like her as a babyface, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like her booking's been too good in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Darren, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I think, and I agree that it does seem like she's going to heel, but it also it's kind of like they're fighting the tide because she's somebody that the fans just naturally liked and were attaching themselves to, and she had a lot of good support, and you're just fighting the tide trying to turn her heel. I'm not sure why they want to do this unless this is just some misguided attempt.
But I'd add to that, Darren, you're fighting the tide by pushing her as a main eventer. You know, like, I think fans like her. It's like, I like you, but not in that way.
Right.
That's how the fans feel about her, you know? And I don't mean
yeah.
that in the way it usually is said, but, like, we like you, but not as a main eventer. We just, mm-hmm. just that's, you're not really, you want to be nice, but you're not that. And so I still think, I mean, I say it all the time. The ultimate, the best path for her is it's been nice visiting main events, but let's move it back down to something more,
right.
more at her skill level or her charisma level, I should say.
And this will and certainly give her a little more credibility, having a little run with the title, getting the fluke wins over Ronda. And if she returns to that role, this will probably be good for her. So we'll see how that plays out, but they might go totally against that as well.
Yeah. Javier, back to you. What else?
Yeah, I'm thinking her best role in the WWE is basically the Yoshihashi of the WWE.
Yeah. Anything else from that's not Liv based? Oh, go ahead, Javier. Yeah.
no, because for the people who don't know who Yoshihashi is, in New Japan, he's basically a perennial underdog who always gets beaten and always, you know, gets up and continues fighting. So, but you know, he will never be the actual champion. So.
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm. That mm-hmm. is, I think, a
yeah,
good role
the,
for her, and there's no shame in being in that role. The shame is, you know, failing at a higher level over and over and over again.
The and you catch the mention of Evolve?
No, I didn't.
I didn't catch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they mentioned, I think it was Gargano. I forgot who it was. I think it was Graves or Cole mentioned that Gargano and Owens, I think, were they mentioned somebody in the match was tag team championships in the ball.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not shocked. Okay. I'm not shocked by that. It's not, you know, I mean, I don't think Levesque has any problem with that.
Yeah, I just found it surprising because, you know, one of the nice little changes where you're
right.
I mean, you know, I can understand the missing NXT. Yeah. And I'm wondering, does it have anything
right.
to do with that? Because I think, what's his name? I'm going to butcher his name, I think. Sapolsky, is that his name?
Gabe Sapolsky, yeah.
Yeah, because he's working for them now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's an advisor or something like that, yeah. On the main roster, I just was reading about that today, I think, yeah.
I just had a follow-up quote from my interview with Gabe 20 years ago in this week's Wrestling Torch newsletter. I do a 20 years ago snippet on the back page every week. And one of his quotes is, this was about, you know, in the early stage of ROH, and I was interviewing about that. He goes, WWE is sports entertainment. If everything that we're they're everything we're not doing. What you see in WWE is what you won't see with us. If the boss is telling the wrestlers what to do and the wrestlers go and do it like a bunch of dogs, then how is that any different than what the people have to do in their real lives? How are these people going to have any respect for these wrestlers and look up to them when they're being treated this way? I don't know what WWE's thinking. The reason Steve Austin was so over is he went against the boss. So that's my my pull-out quote. And that's a pitch to go VIP. You can with Dave Sapolsky, all fired up about what ROH will stand for and what it will and will not do and how it will differentiate itself from WWE way back then. And that, by the way, that was issue number 720, issue 724, September 28th, 2002, and it's in our back issue section, so we'll be happy, everybody. Check out our massive library. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and I want, last thing, more of a general overview thing, but I've been enjoying commentary a lot more lately with Cole being allowed to be more human, you know, talking about his drinking habits.
I didn't tell
today.
He got a little too... Yeah, well, you got a little giddy about the Hit Row teaching him dance moves. And
yeah.
I saw Cole in that mode once after, like, a few hours after a WWE event, and he showed up, like, on the sidewalk outside the hotel lobby, like, hanging out with some WWE people. And he had, like, a baseball cap. I've told this story before, but he had, like, a baseball cap on sideways or backwards. He's like, what's up? And he was all,
oh,
like,
God.
And I'm like, and he was like, you know, I don't know, probably at that time, like 40 years old. And it was like, he's acting like this, you know, 21-year-old, you know, 19-year-old frat boy. And we got a little window of that tonight. I was like, oh, God. And then Corey's like, I'm never looking at you again. I'm never looking at you the same way again, Cole. I would say Cole Unleashed is good to a point. But
yeah.
I feel like we don't want him to get too comfortable with his new freedom, huh?
Right. And we're heading into that territory. Yes. Yeah.
I just loved his line where he's talking about, I think it was the Tennessee whiskey, and he goes, and I have a fondness for that, for the name of that move. If you know, you know. I just that was fun. And then shooting back on Corey Graves was like, hey, I do my homework, so. Since anytime anybody pushes back and Corey Graves makes me smile, but yeah, so I think that's pretty much it. What I got, just a put. You know, I mean, and I do. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Huh? Yeah, I'm with you, Wade. I did think this was Karen Cross's best work. That they've done so far. I mean, it was a, you know, film thing, but yeah, this was his best work. I actually do think he has something. I don't think anyone's been able to really, you know, get it out of him. I think Impact presented him really well when they first presented him early on. As you know, just a killer. I mean, that was his name, Killer Cross. You know, they presented him well, but you know, I mean, I'm still hoping. I guess I'm still hoping up hope, holding out hope that he does something. But I don't think that he's winning against Drew McIntyre. I would be not smart. So that's a preview yeah. for when I do the primer show next week.
Okay, very good. All right, cool.
Wait, so I have Darren here. Can I talk about Impact for a second?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Oh, I would love you guys to.
Man, I'm finally catching up. I mean, I'm still got to watch last week's episode. I'm just curious where you're, because, I mean, I'm sorry, I haven't really heard much of you because since I've been behind. I just caught up. So I'm like, yeah, I can finally start listening to Darren. I've been wanting to for a long time, but I don't like getting spoiled. And I've been so far behind.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you know, Monday shows. You're on my Monday Monday at work thing.
Javier, you're already dead to Darren. You got nowhere.
Yeah, I'm
totally
aware.
Up from
I'm
here.
Aware.
So
I'm aware. I'm aware. You know, I am curious. What are your thoughts on like the stuff like the Undead Realm? Because I mean that tends to be my favorite because I like those characters and the way they're presented and just like Impact for me is kind of like own universe. You hate or you? So if you're laughing, I assume you hate.
It's fine. It makes sense within their universe and they don't overdo it. they haven't done it in months. I think they did something with Jessica Havoc and Rosemary a little bit. And it looks, I don't want to spoil this week's episode, but it looks like they're headed towards something that may be coming up. They have alluded to something. So as long as they do it in small doses, I don't mind it. I mean, I find it entertaining. But it's something you don't want to go to the well too much, obviously. It's silly, but it makes sense in the context within the world of Impact Wrestling. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, because that's kind of been my thing. Cause I listened to when I was watching it, and this is how much I've had to catch up. I was listening when Andrew and Mike and Van were actually covering Impact. That's when I was watching it, live.
Yeah.
So that was a while ago. So I pretty much fell behind, and I pretty much just catch up pay-per-view to pay-per-view, and then like rapidly fall behind again. It's been enjoyable so far.
Cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I had.
Nice. All right. Well, Javier, thanks for calling up.
No problem. Have a good night, guys. And I will listen. I promise.
Yeah. Take,
Thanks.
Promise, man.
We'll hold you to
now,
it.
Now, here's the question. Do you
when
listen to the
Fan September.
Pride podcast when it's out?
Javier stepped on my joke here, and Darren's ahead of me. Javier, when Darren's back on in September 2023 on the Gold Chair, we'll hold you to that you've been listening to.
I'll mark it down on my calendar for next year's season finale.
Exactly, the season finale.
Yes.
Cool.
All right, guys.
Have a really good weekend, Javier. Awesome.
See
you. My goal is to make Javier uncomfortable at the end of his.
Yes, and you succeed more often than not.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Okay. Is there anything else that you want to bring up from the show tonight? And I'm kind of, scrolling through my report, just thinking if there's anything that jumps out to me. And I mean, I think we covered everything. I mean, Austin Theory still looking good, but they're not scared to have him lose. But Cole is saying he's one of the most talented wrestlers we've seen. It's just a matter of needing an attitude adjustment. So a little, I don't know if that's an Easter egg or just an obvious reference to John Cena. But I thought that was noteworthy. Los Lotharios not in for a push, but Hit Row still kind of being protected as kind of a gimmicky act and not, they're getting wins, but, I don't take them seriously as like a contenders for tag titles or like that have like these long classic matches. So I'm not quite sure what their future is.
Right. Yeah. They might be able to stand a little more NXT seasoning. I didn't think they looked great in that match. I think the wrong team went over. They could use a little more work. So I'm not sure what their future is, but yeah, they're not ready for title matches, the next level or anything like that. I think they're just going to be relegated to comedy for now.
And I don't think there's an excuse to not have Chad Gable talk on a show that he's going to be on.
Right. You got to utilize him to his fullest as well.
Yes. Darren, we've made references to it. Talk about your Impact reports and also your Impact VIP show and just kind of tell people what you right now find most compelling about the Impact product, and not that your work for them or it's your job to sell the show to people, but for people who are enjoying the show, what is it that is Impact strength right now in your view?
I do enjoy watching it every week from a perspective of a fan. The storylines make sense. They utilize the people that they have on the roster pretty much to their fullest. There's a couple of guys I'd like to see used better. Chris Bay comes to mind, Ace Austin, but they, with what they have, they're doing very well. And they also utilize guest stars well also. So you'll see people make one-off appearances or maybe come in for a little bit to keep the product fresh. For instance, Delirious from Ring of Honor was just in for a couple of shots, and that helped keep things fresh. Frankie Kazarian from AEW is coming in next week to get a shot at the X Division title against Mike Bailey. Speaking of which, the Impact's biggest show of the year is next Friday, going head up against the season premiere of SmackDown. So Bound for Glory is next Friday. The main event is Josh Alexander, who's the Impact World Champion, going up against Eddie Edwards. And they've done a great job of building those two up. They had a very lengthy interview segment between the two last week, and they both defined why they want to go after the world title. Eddie Edwards wants power, pretty much is what it boiled down to, and Josh Alexander wants to win or retain the championship because he thinks he's the best in the world. So you get those kind of logical storylines, not too much silliness. There's some comedy, but the comedy that they do, number one, it's actually funny. Good skits with like Johnny Swinger and that kind of thing, and they keep it brief. And of course, there is some Undead Realm stuff every once in a while, and initially, you know, I roll my eyes at it like, this is ridiculous. But as I just mentioned, they kind of limit it, and it's fun, and it makes sense within their so-called Impact universe. But it's worth taking a look. Every show, it's like a two-hour-long show on Access TV and some other outlets, always goes by really quick. You can see some really good acts like the Motor City Machine Guns, who are reunited and just are on fire, and they're going to get a shot at the World Tag Team titles next week against Mike Bennett and Matt Taven, who are the champions right now. So if you have one of those people that haven't watched Impact in a while, just as a fan, I would recommend giving them a shot. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And if you want to know the recap, I do the recaps for the Torch every week. And with my little analysis, and then I do a podcast just kind of running down what happened in the week of Impact also.
Excellent.
On the VIP side.
Cool. Well, Darren, it's been, yes, very, very, very much on the VIP side. Thank you so much. It's been fun having you back on. I look forward to next year.
I'm putting it down on my calendar. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And I will clear my schedule.
Oh, yes, yes. I like to plan ahead. Thanks. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers, emailer, Javier, and we will sign off for tonight.